magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. Rob, you had this great editors meeting yesterday. You're walking everyone through it. You were giving out prizes, but I need a little timer. Next time you give out those gifts, bring a timer. But in a minute or less, I'm going to cover a couple updates, and we're going to go into, I think, two or three stories and a real special letter that was written.
Oh, so the timer is just for you.
Yeah, the timer is so I can minimize the introductory announcement.
Oh, sure.
So I get that from one of those ESPN, the sportscasters. They have two things, and they only have 60 seconds or less, and then they go on to the next topic. Then they have 60 seconds or less.
Oh, for the announcements.
Yeah, and so there's always a time clock, so you know, okay, they only have 12 more seconds to talk about that item. Then it's on to football or the tournament or whatever it is.
So. I thought you wanted the timer so you could time our meeting.
want
it for yourself.
Yeah,
time your announcement.
So my quick couple announcements in a minute or less are, please be praying up the board meeting we'll be having in a few hours. We always feel like God directs and leads and guides us, and we get to share all the things that are happening with this radio ministry, and I give a president's report and updates, and we look at the financials and all that, but they're always really important meetings. We meet quarterly, and we have 10 board members, and so it's always a joy to get everyone together, and then usually I get to brag up what the listeners are doing and the ministry work that's being accomplished. So that's always really fun, so be praying that up. That'll be happening at noon today.
Don't you sometimes have speakerphone for people who can't be there?
Yeah, sometimes, like Phil Shepard, who's up in the Chicagoland area, and Dr. David Dunn, who's in the St. Louis area. Sometimes they'll connect via the phone line, so... Sometimes we just put a phone and put it on speaker, one facing this way and the other facing this way.
High tech.
Yeah. A couple of times we've had one of those. I borrowed it from a friend from his business, Martin Graphics, or Martin OneSource now, and it's one of those fancy, you know, where you press it and everyone's connected and it sounds really good. But we'll do the old-fashioned thing and just have the phones out later today. In a few hours, actually. And then tonight at 6:30, for those that want to know more information about our trip to Washington, D.C., coming this October, it's called Our American Heritage. It's 6 days we'll be traveling to Washington, D.C., 5 overnight, 17 meals. A great trip. I think we'll have a bus load filled maybe by tonight. I think we have already about 34 people signed up, and I think by the end of tonight, certainly in the next week or two, we should have that bus filled. But if you're interested in knowing more, or you want to meet some of the others going, come out to the Great News Radio Center tonight at 6:30. We'll have some desserts laid out. Chris Sender, her and her husband Dave, are the owners of Happy Trails. They're kind of facilitating all the logistics, getting us in, making the arrangements for the White House tour and all the different things. They know when the traffic flow is good and bad and where to park and where to go and making all the hotel arrangements. And then I play host and keep everyone happy and moving forward.
So. Every time you say Happy Trails, I think of Roy Rogers and Dale Evans.
They're kind of like, they're really good. So, all right. Well, the
timer's turning over.
Yep, timer's over. We're done to the minute. A few days ago, we got this letter. And I was very encouraged by it because it highlighted the Prime Life Times, how it's really read and received well. And then it honors a care facility in Covington, Indiana.
Yeah.
And I called the individual yesterday and got permission to read this. And his wife wasn't available. Norma Doolin, she sent it in. And then it includes a poem. And then we have Rob in here, our copy editor.
Yep, that's correct.
And he's going to read, I think, two stories. So... let's jump into the letter.
Okay,
this was received just a few days ago, and I just was so encouraged by it.
Yeah, you really were. Okay, it's very nice. Dear friends, you are my company 3 days a week as I drive to Covington. Just before our 61st anniversary 3.5 years ago, my husband suddenly lost the use of his legs. He was treated for a lower back problem. After several weeks with no improvement, it was found to be caused by a broken bone in the neck.
Yeah.
The surgery was successful, but due to the time lost, he never regained full use of his legs. In 1976, we bought a bi-level house, never thinking we would reach the point of not climbing stairs. He is at the Waters in Covington. Is that the place you call it?
Yes, yes. We want to get our papers delivered over there in the coming days.
That's great. Most call it a nursing home. I like to think of it as a health care facility. After all, what we call a prison on 136 is named a correctional facility.
Mm-hmm.
It took over a year and a lot of stress, asking God why, before I now see it as his plan. The residents and workers have become family to us. In visiting with the residents, we share a lot of memories. many times an article in the Prime Life Times.
Woo-hoo!
Covers and verifies things from the past. I've often told about my brothers and I walking the fence rows, filled gunny sacks with milkweed seeds.
And wasn't it Kathleen Jennings that had that one article some months back?
Yeah, she did.
The milkweed goes to war.
That's right, that's right. The younger ones couldn't believe we did this for the war. You printed an article about this.
Yeah.
Also, they had never heard of pant stretchers. That was your article, Rob. I read the article to the younger staff at the Waters. How about something about curtain stretchers? Could you do that one? Also, I remember my mother using something like Silly Putty for cleaning wallpaper. When I mentioned about drinking from a saucer, they had never heard of doing that. The funny thing is, each time I said it, an older person would relate a family member who had done just that.
Mm-hmm.
My grandpa did. I'm enclosing a poem I received many years ago. I should add, I was born in 1936.
Woo-hoo.
Sincerely, Norman.
1936, the senior saint. Thank you for taking the time for reading and driving and tuning us in and listening. And I had permission from her husband, Ed, to go ahead and read the story. So.
And we'll put this poem in the paper, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
This is a great poem.
It is. It is. So the poem, Drinking from a Saucer, it says author unknown. So here it is. I've never made a fortune, and it's probably too late now. But I don't worry about it much. I'm happy anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
As I go along life's journey, I'm reaping better than I sowed. I'm drinking from my saucer, because my cup has overflowed. Ain't got a lot of riches. Sometimes the going's rough. But I got a kid that loves me, and that makes me rich enough. I just thank God for his blessings and the mercy he's bestowed. I'm drinking from my saucer, because my cup has overflowed.
Mm-hmm.
Remember times when things went wrong, and my faith got a little thin? Then all at once, the dark clouds broke, and the old sun broke through again. So, Lord, help me not to gripe about the tough rows I've hoed. I'm drinking from my saucer, cause my cup has overflowed. And if God gives me strength and courage, when the way gets steep and rough, I won't ask for other blessings. I'm already blessed enough. And may I never be too busy to help another bear his load. Then I'll keep drinking from my saucer, cause my cup has overflowed. I love that poem.
And there's a song. I don't know. I don't have time. I don't think to play it, but it's a song that recounts that with lyrics and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
I love that poem.
That's a great song.
We will put that in the paper. And speaking of these fantastic articles that she's talking about, here's Rob.
And we're looking at the front page of the April edition of the Prime Life Times, the paper that's informative, engaging, and positive for the 50-plus lifestyle. But it's so good, the content, the material, the puzzles, the jokes, the stories, that I think just about any age would love reading it and enjoys reading it.
Yeah, I agree. 50 looks really younger and younger and younger.
That's right.
It's like 30. You know?
Yeah.
50 is a new 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is my second time to make the front page on this paper.
Oh, boy.
I'm really pumped.
Yeah.
If my mom were not in heaven and we're here instead, I'd say, Mom, I told you I could write.
That's right. That's
so this
great.
This is Rural Memories for the month of April, the day Grandma drove. My maternal grandma didn't drive, but between dinner and supper, she could transform an unwary chicken into the best fried chicken. She could bake delicious bread, cinnamon rolls, and pies, and she likely held the world's record for best drop biscuits. She brought a .22 rifle and a double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun into the family, and she knew how to use them both against farmers who threatened our farm animals. When we couldn't get to town to buy popsicles one blistering hot summer, she found a way to make some in molds in the refrigerator with sticks and all. If you asked her about wild plants and herbs, she could recite recipes for many cures from native plants. I often was the beneficiary of her spring tonics, that is, after such a tonic was applied, or ingested, administered, dispensed, you might say, I was a regular guy in every way.
Who knew?
Grandma could do so many things. I guess it never seemed important that you couldn't drive. All of us young rapscallions could drive by early teens.
Rapscallions? I don't see that word often.
So there seemed to be no need. Grandma graduated from high school at 16 and was immediately contracted to teach at another nearby one-room school. She taught until she went to business college 2 years later. She graduated with a business degree, got married, and set up housekeeping all the same year. They paid the station master 50 cents to haul their brand new household furniture to their farmhouse with his team and wagon. They had ordered it from the Sears Roebuck catalog, mm-hmm. and it had arrived by Railway Express. Grandpa, who died before I came along, never worried about the farm accounts. He told Grandma, she wrote it down and did the calculations, and that was that.
Hmm.
Grandma told us about walking and sleighing across frozen lakes, ponds, and rivers, walking over fences on frozen snowdrifts, and cutting ice in winter to store in the sawdust-insulated ice house for summer. She knew how to fix most anything a body might wear, she would say. Shoes, her dad had moonlighted as a shoemaker, socks, a darning egg, a flat needle, and special thread kept socks alive well past their life expectancy. And she once helped me fix a broken pair of snowshoes. She drove a team of horses with a plumb and knew all about how to set hens, hatch chicks, and so forth. She could tell us kids whether we were looking at fox, raccoon, mink, or weasel tracks outside the hen house, and she knew all manner of things about survival. When Mother had needed a formal dress for college back in 1933, Grandma took the wool headliner out of a wrecked touring car, unceremoniously dumped into a ditch on their farm, and she crafted an elegant dress that my mom wore.
Unceremoniously dumped.
Yeah, the real story is the sheriff hired my grandpa to haul it away, to drag it away with a team of horses, because it got wrecked in the middle of the road.
And that's where he dumped it.
Yeah, well, there was just a ditch, so he just pulled it over there and left it.
Jeez.
And she crafted an elegant dress that my mom wore proudly all the way through college. Grandma once saved my life, literally. When one of us five kids went outside to use the outhouse in sub-zero weather, she woke up just enough to keep track of who went out and who came back in. Until that night, I hadn't known that. Grandma's bedroom was down the hall to the left from where our bedroom opened to the hallway, and fortunately she heard me go out. She knew us all by our footsteps. This particular night, the mercury was somewhere south of 40 degrees below zero. I was 9, and despite the extreme cold, my condition required the use of outdoor facilities. Mission accomplished, I started back to the house, but slipped and fell, hitting my head on a flagstone. And there I lay, unconscious to my danger. Who should come to my rescue but Grandma?
Hmm.
Had she not intervened on that bitterly cold night, you wouldn't be reading this column.
Hmm.
One unseasonably blustery April morning, Dad was taking Grandma into town to meet some of her lady friends for our book club meeting at the local library. The ladies read a chapter of an agreed-on book each month, then met to discuss it. Dad would take along the eggs to deliver on his weekly route, and by the time he was finished doing that and possibly running an errand or two, he would collect Grandma and drive her back home. He'd been really busy that morning, and besides, it was starting to snow hard, especially for that late in the year. He put tire chains on the car, got Grandma safely in her seat, and started driving up our steep lane from the farmstead. But just before the summit, the little car slipped off into the ditch on the right-hand side. Though an expert driver, Dad couldn't get the car to budge either forward or backward. He left Grandma there in the warm car, engine running and handbrake set, checked to see that the exhaust pipe was clear of snow, and jogged down the hill to get our little 8-in Ford tractor and a log chain to pull the car out. Even with the tractor, he couldn't move the car, though, because the front wheels would turn in the wrong direction as soon as the tow chain tightened. Grandma, said Dad in desperation, I need you to drive. Oh, for land's sake, I'll wreck the car, was her initial response. You don't have to do anything but steer the car to the left as I pull it out, Dad said soothingly. Grandma thought a minute and then replied, I can do that. She climbed out on her side, waded through the deepening snow, got into the driver's side, and took the wheel. She was already in her 80s, but she was game to give it a try. Besides, she didn't want to miss her book club meeting. It was her only opportunity to see those particular friends. Within 5 minutes, Dad had pulled the car up the hill to the township road with Grandma at the wheel. He made sure the car was on the level so it wouldn't run off downhill with Grandma, reached into the car to set the parking brake, unhooked the log chain, pulled the tractor out of the way, got Grandma back into the passenger seat, and they were off for town. That snowy April morning went down in family history as the day Grandma drove.
I love it. She could do all these things that you mentioned. She could shoot the .22 rifle, the double barrels, 12-gauge, all these things, but she couldn't drive.
No need, as she would say.
That's
the
great.
The day Grandma drove on the front page of the April edition of the Prime Life Times.
I just really enjoy these. You really capture things from that time and era, and you bring it to colorful life, Rob.
Yeah, and one of the early signs of old age is reminiscing a lot. So
oh,
see
is
where
it?
I'm headed.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, I've always liked to reminisce, so I'm kind of concerned now. Yeah. 50 does look young.
Mm. Remember, the 50 is the new 30.
That's there right. It is, yeah. That's right.
Now, what page are we turning to next?
Well, I just wanted to talk with Rob a minute because when I wrote this little, as one of the Prime Lifetime staff writers, this little trivia corner about Arbor Day, which is very interesting, and I will read it real quick, but he really knows a lot about Arbor Day. He also wrote an article in here about the Redwoods, but Rob really knows a lot about Arbor Day. He has planted, like, an amazing amount of trees himself with his family, but I'll read this, and then you talk about that, okay?
Okay, and it's a great picture of a 2-cent stamp here. For those that collected stamps, they probably have this in their collection.
Yeah,
yeah, this was issued in 1932.
Yeah. Okay, Arbor Day is set aside to plant trees and to help replenish the Earth's tree population on a community scale. It's commonly observed on the last Friday in April. The first Arbor Day in the United States was celebrated on April 10, 1872. An estimated 1 million trees were planted. God bless those people in 1872.
And that was the first one. Yeah.
I know. I did not know people did that. The U.S. Arbor Day concept was founded by Julius Sterling Morton. Among Mr. Morton's other varied achievements, he was appointed by President Grover Cleveland as United States Secretary of Agriculture. In that office, Morton worked to turn the department into a coordinated service to farmers.
Now, this Morton, that's not the Morton Salt family, is it?
I'm not sure. We can find out, though.
Yeah. In 1907, President Roosevelt issued the Arbor Day Proclamation to the school children of the United States to promote teaching the importance of forestry. By 1920, every state had followed Morton's initiative and had passed a law designating an Arbor Day for planting trees. Hmm. Spring weather patterns can sometimes precipitate the need for date adjustment. Arbor Day is a civic holiday in the state of Nebraska.
Yeah, and if you drive across Nebraska, you see why. They have three trees. They're all right down there on the Platte River.
Oh,
that's a joke.
Yeah. Well, April 26th is the last Friday in this month. So.
But, you know, honestly, we have so much going on right now about people wanting to help the environment, do things. In 1872, these people planted 1 million trees. And you talk about your family and what they did. Rob, tell us a little about that because that's interesting.
Well, in 1949, my family moved to a hilly farm, and I mean a real hilly farm in northwest Illinois in Carroll County. And my dad had always been farming on the Has before that, up to that time, where he rented the land and then he paid for half of everything. He had half the cows, half the pigs, half the ducks, half the chickens, I suppose. And then he got half of everything in return. The farm just before that one, he actually cash rented, which was unusual for that time. So they wanted to own their own farm. So he and my mom visited this place, the old Keller Place. Everything was known as such and such place in those days, named after somebody. And there was grass growing in the yard chest high. And Dad said, I think this land will grow stuff. You know, so he hadn't heard about the story of the prairies and people didn't want to settle there because they
thought
if it couldn't grow trees, it surely wouldn't grow crops. Anyway, so we kind of settled that farm, if you will. It was a little unkempt through the years and had been left a little bit unattended. Well, there were some pretty steep hills that those folks had plowed in the 1800s that probably should never have been cleared. And so Dad said, you know, I think we need to put some of this back in timber. This is just too steep. We're not getting any good for pasture, and we're certainly not going to try to farm it. He was a real conservationist. He farmed on the contour. He did strip farming and all kinds of conservation methods. So one year, we planted about 16,000 trees.
Now, when you say we, who is the we? Yeah. You and the mouse in your pocket, isn't it?
The mouse and the cookie. Yeah, right. So either Dad, my little brother Rick, or I would drive our little Ford tractor, and then we had a machine we rented from the conservation department. There was a tree planter, and it just opened up the ground and then closed it behind and rolled it in tight. And so every so often, you would just sit there on the seat and put a tree seedling down.
Did you say 16,000?
I think maybe that might be right for that 1 year, but we planted many trees after that. For example,
this was over a continuous period of weeks, about a month.
Yeah, about a month off and on.
Wow.
Whenever we had a minute, we did that. And you can still see those pine trees, red pines and white pines.
Mm. I think this is inspiring. So,
yeah, I would not have planted, in retrospect, I would not have planted red and white pines. I mean, you can't burn them as firewood. They clog up the chimney, and we just don't have a big market for that kind of wood. But later, we would trim the trees and so on. And then later still, I planted a lot of walnuts and oaks with the help of college students who were on spring break, and they were glad to come out and help the environment in exchange for three really nice farm meals a day.
Oh, that's so
which
nice.
My mom and grandma would supply.
Sure, sure.
And we planted a lot. And that time, we went where you couldn't go with a tractor, and we planted using a tree bar. And this tree bar has a blade on the end and a little place to put 1 or 2 feet on, and you jump on it with 1 or 2 feet. It goes in, you wiggle it back and forth, put it in, and then you close the soil back on both sides after putting a little water in if it's dry. If it's
spring, and you can't see Rob's hands here. He's showing us how it all worked, and the shovel and the digging and the pathing it back over.
Oh. So now my brother is the president of their conservation board up there in Carroll County.
Really? Mm-hmm.
In God's country. And he helps to pass out trees to all the students in all the local schools. And last couple of years, he's gone to the Amish Mennonite school and given a little talk on the importance of trees, and it's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely fascinating.
Well, you can read all about it in this month's edition of the Prime Life Times, able to be picked up in almost 300 locations. Yes, getting up to nearing 300 area locations. Or read it online at primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com. Well, thanks for listening. And look what I found, Drinking from the Saucer by Jimmy Dean. You'll love it, and I'll play a portion. This is Mark Burns, Marianne Simpkins, and Rob Seidenberg with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.
I've never made a fortune, and it's probably too late now. But I don't worry about that much. I'm happy anyhow. And as I go along life's journey, I'm reaping better than I sowed. And I'm drinking from a saucer because my cup has overflowed. Don't have a lot of riches, and sometimes the going's tough, but I got 3 kids that love me, and that makes me rich enough. I just thank God for His blessings and the mercies He's bestowed. I'm drinking from a saucer because my cup is overflowed. Oh, I remember times when things went wrong and my faith got a little bit thin, but then all at once, the dark clouds broke and that old sun peeked through again. So Lord, help me not to gripe about the tough roads that I've hoed. I'm drinking from a saucer because my cup has overflowed. And if God gives me strength and courage when the way grows steep and rough, I'll not ask for other blessings. I'm already blessed enough. And may I never be too busy to help another bear his load. Then I'll keep drinking from a saucer, 'cause my cup has overflowed.